This week on RSBNB Update, Ma Jack joins us and we chat about building Azanadra's quest from narrative design all the way to the rumblings of the Temple Knights. Then it's Yak to Basics with Ninja Strike 20 and Slayer, and we end with a preview of the Rex Matriarchs. This is RSBNB Update, episode 819, recorded Thursday, March 4th, 2021. The World Guardian's Path. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week, we got a jam-packed, big episode this week. Tanis, you're here as you are each and every week.
Yeah, thank you, Shane. I'm in the future, and then I'm coming back to the past.
RSBNB Update, back to the future. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the folks, of course, wondering what exactly we're talking about, well, of course, we got the full slate of RS updates to run down this week. Yak to the Basics, sneak peek of what's coming next week. Of course, as I mentioned, we were going to be sitting down with Ma Jack this week. And, you know, Tanis is just off over there having a break while we do this segment. Tanis will be back later for the rest of the full episode, of course, but I have the pleasure of introducing to RSBNB Update, Ma Jack. Welcome aboard.
Hi there.
So we're just going to have a bit of a talk this week about Azanadra's quest, and Sirion's here to help out with that. Welcome back, Sirion.
Thanks for having me.
And, you know, it's not too often we get to do this. We have such a huge quest where, you know, we have huge ramifications for the world, huge ramifications for the World Guardian, and then to pair that up with a discussion with one of the designers on the quest. That's new for RSBNB Update territory, so listeners, let us know what you think. And Ma Jack, hopefully you enjoy your time with us here on this. And
I'm sure I will.
We're going to start off with some quick-fire questions just to introduce you to the listeners. So, you know, you've been with Jagex for a long time. What's been, if you could just pick one update, what would be your favorite one that you've worked on?
Ooh, probably Broken Home.
Interesting.
Well, no, to be honest, it's probably Azanadra's Quest, but actually Azanadra's Quest doesn't count really, right? Because it's the most recent one.
Yeah, and that's what we're here to talk about, of course.
Let's go with Broken Home.
Oh, that's controversial, I think.
Yeah, it wasn't supposed to be quite as controversial as it actually ended up. I think it's primarily controversial because of having to repeat it
with that time.
And it was supposed to be a fun Halloween event, which went permanently into the game, right? So if you think of it in the context of a Halloween event, but then it was also then a permanent addition. That was the sort of original vision for it. And then it had added to it a mandatory replay feature, which I think bothered a lot of people.
And then there was time involved too for that one achievement.
Yeah. And then there were some people had technical issues with it, right? Like some people couldn't, like the load times were so slow that the way that the mechanics worked meant that the monster killed them before they could get out of the corridor. Yeah. And that was really unfortunate. And it's always hard to know what to do with that kind of stuff. We struggle with that on RuneScape a little bit. Like, to what extent do we provide, I don't want to say lowest common denominator because that sounds really mean, but right. You know, we provide for people on relatively low spec hardware. To what extent should we compromise the gameplay to make it playable by the worst possible spec? It's a difficult question to answer. I don't think there's an obvious right answer there.
Yeah,
and then I think Broken Home did suffer a bit from that.
Yeah, and that's something Jagex does with lots of updates, is, you know, make them available to so many people. And, you know, you've been around the block many times. What's one fact about you, Ma Jack, the person, that everybody should probably be aware of that they don't get to see behind the mask?
A fact about me that not everyone's aware of. I love singing karaoke.
Oh, okay. All right.
I think I probably don't create that impression.
You don't.
But I do. I love singing karaoke. I'm now infamous for it in the office, of constantly. Whenever we're going anywhere, we do, so obviously coronavirus has interfered with this, but usually we have three yearly outings. We have the Jagex summer party, the Jagex Christmas party, and Runefest, all of which involve, you know, coachfuls of J-mods sailing off into the unknown.
Right.
And I'm legendary for pulling out, like, music on the bus and making everyone sing. On the way back from Rune, it must be the most. It was the most recent RuneFest. Was that 2019?
Yeah.
Stu and I sang 2 hours back to Cambridge. We sang the entire way home.
Oh boy.
Oh wow. All right.
We had because Stu didn't know most of the songs, so we had the lyrics. And Stu's got a beautiful singing voice, by the way. I know, like, people love his talking voice, but he's got a fantastic singing voice. Puts me to shame. So it's fun to sing with him.
What's your favorite quest in game?
Oh, that's easy. That's One Pissing Note.
Ah, okay.
That's kind of a boring answer as well.
No, I actually think it's
amazing. So.
I think it's a perfect answer because we talk about One Piercing Note on the podcast as being one of those hallmarks of a quest. It's got everything, and it was such a big technical feat with the choir and the song.
Yeah, the music and just the way it's such a perfect complete story.
Yeah.
I think there are one or two. I've watched a lot of people play through it, and I think there are one or two places where it's a bit too easy to get stuck. But that's an incredibly minor complaint by comparison. I think it's an extraordinary piece of work.
All right. What's your favorite thing about RuneScape, the game?
Ooh, it's a bit different. It's kind of a unique experience. I mean, so RuneScape has had a really interesting journey over its 20-year life, right, in terms of where it stands in the marketplace and what sort of product it is. But the thing about RuneScape that really stands out is that it's a game about long-term investment in accomplishments in a way that a lot of even other games that appear to be the same, because obviously the mobile genre has exploded over the history of RuneScape.
Yeah.
The web genre exploded, then the mobile genre exploded. You know, we at one point RuneScape was the only fish in the pond, and now it's an enormous ocean full of games. But even so, I feel like those games don't have that emphasis on long-term progression and accomplishment. If you play, you know, mobile games don't have a very long expected life expectancy. You know, they come out, you play them for a bit, you grind a bit, you spend some money, and then the game shuts down and you move on to the next thing.
Right.
They have a sort of inherently limited lifespan. If RuneScape's been here for 20 years, and you can have your account. The fact that a lot of people set up their accounts when they were children is kind of a problem, but you can have your account. And you, 20 years later, you can still be playing on that same account. The items that you earned 20 years ago still have meaning.
Oh, absolutely.
That's incredible. Yeah.
And to that note, I have a Santa hat that I got in 2004 that I still break out every Christmas.
Oh, yeah, exactly, right? Brilliant.
Yeah.
And there are other games in the genre, but none of them, like most of them sort of enforce things become redundant over time.
Yeah, that makes
sense. And RuneScape is a lot less like that. You know, if you leveled fire making back in Classic, then your fire making still counts, you know. It's still there. It's still the. I mean, obviously, fire making is not very useful, but you know the point I'm making.
Yeah.
Your fire making,
yeah.
Fire making
that's
skill.
Amazing.
Yeah, fire making.
I never considered that aspect.
Is
so
a skill
amazing.
I'm not.
I haven't thought about the factual nature of the statement, but I have a feeling it might be almost unique in the world in that regard, in terms of the combination of long term permanent accomplishment.
You know, somebody could probably write a master's thesis on games about that one.
But
we're going to move on to Azanandra's quest, but there's one more question that I think everybody wants to hear from you. Have you heard about the mining and smithing rework?
I have. It was amazing.
Yeah, you know, we just had to ask that, given you were on the team that
Have you heard the story that it was Mod Tomb's mastermind?
Yeah,
talking about the mining and smithing. It was his great idea. Was like, why don't we advertise in game that it's coming? Because we didn't want people to be caught out. We didn't want, you know, it did affect people's possessions and their banks. I just talked about long-term accomplishment, right? And the mining and smithing really did affect that. So his big master plan was, you know, we'll advertise it so heavily that it will become kind of a meme, and people won't help but know that it's coming because we'll have talked about it so much. And it worked brilliantly. It did become a meme, and it was fantastic. So that whole ridiculous spamming game that seemed completely over the top.
And we're still reaping the benefits of that today.
Yeah. Right, he was memeing on purpose to try to raise awareness to make sure that no one would be caught out by unwelcome changes they didn't know were coming.
And it worked out really good.
Yeah, he did a really good job. Yeah.
Now, of course, we need to get to the topic that everybody has on their mind: the Elder God Wars. That's going to be to 2021 what archaeology was to 2020, a general theme for the year, something for players to rally around. And the Elder God Wars are going to have a massive impact on the world and RuneScape as a game. So we just want to talk a little bit about Azanandra's quest and how the world building took effect with that. And I think the best place to start out with that is to just ask the question, you know, previous God Wars dungeons have been solely based on PVM. this entire process of the Elder God Wars aims to involve players in every which way. So what led to the decision to kick off the Elder God Wars with a quest instead of, say, a community event or just throwing us into a PVM encounter of old?
I mean, you sort of alluded to it there in that, the aspiration we have here is to provide a year of content around a common theme. And Mod Osborne talked about that a little bit recently on a live stream of saying, like, we always want to do this, but for various production reasons, it never comes to fruition. And this is really our first opportunity to sort of tell a story across multiple quests, across multiple pieces of content to give the year a theme. So the idea is kind of to have a year of content. One player I heard, I can't remember who it was now, said it's kind of like expansions, except broken up into updates. Because we tried the expansion model with Memphos, which was sort of 6 months worth of content all in one go.
Right.
When we backed away from that, we reverted back to multiple different types of content that weren't really related one after the other. And this is then more sort of, if you imagine sort of, like, I don't want to put a concrete number on, but if you think of like 6 months of content being six updates, if you spread those six updates out and tell a common story across the six updates. And you can see us sort of experimenting with doing that a little bit with Raksha, for example, the way that Raksha integrated with the Yak Track and with Effigy Incubator and so on. They were associated with each other. They weren't quite telling like a concrete story. So we're going to go more with that and further with that. That's the idea. So in that context, if you think about it as a year of updates sharing a common theme, I think it makes perfect sense to start with a quest, because the quest is, a quest is our primary method of storytelling. But also, I think when we announced Elder God Wars, we first announced it at RuneFest 2019, I think, players immediately started saying, well, what does that involve? How can that happen? Given where we are in the story at the moment, I don't see how that update makes sense. So we have a narrative, journey to go on to get there. So we didn't want to just drop the dungeon and say, here it is, story or whatever.
And maybe here's a few lore drops, and then you're going to learn about it that way.
What we want to do is go on a story with everybody and sort of get there. And so my aspiration is that by the time the PVM content arrives, even the most lore-averse player, that may be too high an expectation, but even the most lore-averse player will understand who is fighting, why they're fighting, why does this PVM content exist, And we have tools like cutscenes and allowing multiple updates to exist over the year that allows us to get there. So for me, it's very much about sort of justifying the PVM content at a narrative level, if that makes sense.
Okay, so effectively, as an Azanaja's quest was the first piece of content that would effectively set the table going forward for the Elder God Wars.
So how do you think about, like quests, of course, are very, like, they come out now, but there might be players not doing it now, or they might be doing it in, like, new players coming into the game in the future might go into the dungeon first, then do the quest. How do you think about sort of sequences of events when you do storytelling like this?
Yeah, I mean, there's an implicit question there about requirements. Ultimately, I think to an extent we have to meet the players halfway. So if we're imagining a new player, if we think about, so obviously I'm not going to tell you anything about the upcoming content, but if we think about the example of God Wars 1, that's not something that a new player would jump into anyway. They wouldn't just start the game and jump into that. That's a journey of weeks or maybe months away to actually get started on that content. Now, some of the content that we produce is aimed at both high level and low level players, and sometimes we're sort of, only thinking about low level or high level. But in that regard, I'm not too worried about a brand new player getting caught up on the story of mid to high level content, if that makes sense.
Right.
But also in general, I think different pieces of content bother matter to different players. So if we think about different types of category of player, I take that quite seriously in terms of we have our lore players who take the story extremely seriously. We have our PVM. So some players are both. We have PVM lore players. But if we think about the PVM community as we think about them stereotypically, they're not really bothered about lore at all. They don't care who it is they're fighting. If they look cool, that's fine. So the story, the way I see it is the story is there if you want it. If you play the content, say you're new to the game, and someone says, oh, you've got to go do Elder God Wars. That's cool content. You've really got to do it. It's amazing. Great. Okay. So I grind my way up to do that content. If I'm a lore interested player, I can say, well, why does this dungeon exist? What's going on? Why is this content happening in the way that it is? The content is all there for me to go back and look back and find out the story.
Right.
At once, my interest has been piqued by the content itself. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So this seems to like tune into this sort of, like, it's a bit of a trend we've seen with storylines, right? Where a lot of the quests are sort of clean breaks. Like Desperate Times, for example, had no story requirements. And Azanadra, I think, doesn't have any quest requirements, really. What do you see as sort of the benefits and the drawbacks of that approach?
I mean, I'm quite a strident. Not no quest requirements, but say less quest requirements type guy, right? This is one I spend a lot of time on the official RuneScape Discord, talking to people about various different game design issues. I'd encourage people to come on and join in the chat if you want to. But that's that question of like should quests have hard requirements? You know the classic example of Ritual of the Marjorat having, you know, requiring essentially every quest in the game at the time of launch. Whether or not that makes the key argument, I think, is whether or not requiring quests aids in the enjoyment of the story or detracts from it. And my feeling is that an intimidating list of requirements discourages participation in the first place. So on that basis, I am against not quest requirements entirely, but long strings of old content being required to do new content. If I'm ultimately, like, I don't want to be too cynical about it, but our job as content creators is to create cool sounding content. But we have two audiences for our content, essentially. We have people who are currently playing RuneScape. We want to keep providing you with great content so you keep playing RuneScape. But also there are people who've lapsed out of RuneScape, and we want to provide cool content that causes you to come back to RuneScape. I don't want to say either of those audiences is more important. They're both very important. But we can't forget those people who've lapsed out of RuneScape. They're not keeping up with current stuff. And our job is to say, well, you know, obviously we didn't please you in the past, let's do even better and provide something even greater that piques your interest and brings you back. And in that regard, if we bring out a cool new piece of content that's, you know, got good marketing campaign and really cool artwork and assets, and, like, you know, think about the Azanadra quest or the Elder God Wars trailers, they were cool, they got a lot of attention, you know, they intrigued people did come back to RuneScape to see what that was about. If we say, okay, we've brought you in for Azanadra quest, now you have to go do all of Anachronia first. You have to complete several quests. You have to go do a lot of archaeology. We did require archaeology, but not like 107 archaeology. We want people to be able, in reason, jump into the content that we've sold them on, if that makes sense. The thing that we've tried to get them excited about is what we want them doing. Obviously, there are huge limitations on that because RuneScape is a skill-based game. It is about that investment and earning of unlocks, right? So it's not. If every piece of content had no requirements at all, including skill requirements, that wouldn't feel right, right? That wouldn't feel like RuneScape. But there's a balance there.
So how do you account for this in the story writing?
Different developers have different policies on it. I'm in favor, generally, of ignoring the problem. The reason for that is that it's actually surprisingly expensive to accommodate for. And my worry is that it sets an expectation, which I think you can clearly see in the way players think about this. As soon as you take into account one old thing, suddenly you have the absence of every other old thing. If that makes sense. And the number of old things to take into account becomes overwhelming.
If we're going to take one into effect, we got to take more than one into effect, and that is a domino effect.
Exactly. Yeah. Your objective is to get if your objective is to get things completely consistent, that very quickly becomes an insurmountable technical problem. I think you can see that attitude on display in Azanadra Quest, where the player, without choice, without variable checks, alludes to things that have happened in the past that are not required. He explicitly brings the player character, as opposed to another NPC, explicitly brings up something that Seren only tells you during the Yak Track content. She mentions that the eggs are stirring. That's the big reveal at the end of the end of the Yak to the Shadows.
I think that was the one. And
the player says, "Oh, Seren told me this completely out of nowhere." And if you haven't played through that Yak Track, your lore content, you won't know what the player's talking about. But that's okay, because the player tells you what it's about, right? Like, right. You don't know what that's referring to, but you do still have the information because the player repeats it.
And it's not the biggest thing to be worried about in a way. And, you know, with that, I think I, of course, talked to lots of questers, lots of lore players and the like. And in As an Audra's Quest, we saw the Franiske and the World Gate within 5 minutes. And, you know, it took forever to reveal in previous quests leading up to that. So what would you say to a quester or someone in the lore community that's ultimately concerned about this, and why shouldn't they be concerned?
I think the main concern I see is actually the interesting thing about this whole discussion is that what I see, the sentiment I see expressed is if you structure it in the way that you are structuring it, players will enjoy it less. So I don't think it's a selfish concern of I want the content to work in a particular way because it suits me better. I think it's very much that these players have a legitimate like good faith concern that structuring the content in the way that it's structured will cause other people to enjoy it less. So in that regard, I think the most reassuring thing I can say is essentially that I don't think that's correct. It isn't resulting in people enjoying it less. And actually the idea that people should be forced to experience the story in order from the start without any deviation is actually more of a problem than the idea that they might leap into the story. That I keep bringing up examples of other other media, because there's almost nothing else that works this way. Within the context of a single computer game, you tend to experience that story in order, but the sequel never requires you to have played the previous game. There's no sort of content lock on the ability to watch the fifth Marvel Universe movie without having watched the previous ones.
That's exactly the picture I was just picturing in my head as you were going in that direction.
And then my concrete example. So I'm actually a pretty dogged watch things in order, right? I still haven't played The Witcher 2 or The Witcher 3 because I still haven't made it through The Witcher 1, and I don't want to play them out of order. But I did go to watch The Avengers without having watched Captain America because I had no interest in a Captain America movie. And then The Avengers was so good that I then did go back and watch the Captain America movie, and I didn't enjoy it less because I'd watched The Avengers first. And that's the sort of analogy I use.
I feel called out for the stack of Assassin's Creed game that's in my
head. Yeah, right. Yeah. And I did eventually jump to Origins, and
Yeah, like same.
Let's not get on with that.
Everybody loves their games. And, you know, that's something RuneScape is so good at, the narrative when it comes to quests and stories. And you guys have written so many quests. And when you guys write a quest, like As an Audra's, do you guys start with an overall storyboard? Or do you go straight into the narrative of this is what's going to happen in this quest? Or how does that process start?
So As an Audra's Quest had quite an interesting development. We use a variety of different different methodologies for sort of doing this sort of thing. This year, because we have this integrated narrative, which is quite tightly planned, there's actually been more sort of overview than there would normally have been. Like in the past, like for a lot of the Six Age quests. So if we go back to before the Six Age, then the way quests are sort of commissioned, the equivalent of what then would be the production team would say, you know, we need a quest. They might specify some skill requirements. They might specify, you know, it should be a dwarf quest, or they might not. They might just say make any quest around the sort of we need a mid-level quest. And then the developer would go away and essentially pitch a story. And unless there was some tremendous problem with that, that premise would probably get accepted. But if you look at the pre-Six Age content, that's why it's kind of patchworky, because it was essentially up to each developer what they wanted to do. And if they felt like making a vampire quest, they made a vampire quest. And if they didn't feel like making a vampire quest, they didn't make a vampire quest. It's only really post the Six Age transition that we even started thinking about content in terms like, well, there hasn't players really want a vampire finale. Perhaps we should make one. As opposed to, well, no developer really wants to do one, so we won't do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, and so for the duration of the Six Age, things were a little bit more directed in that regard. But the developer still had quite a lot of. So I think it was Rowley and Stu that wrote the vampire finale, I believe, wasn't it? I think so. Sorry, I may be misremembering that. But they would. I don't want to mean ordered, because that's not really how it works. But they were, you know, they were assigned to the project of making a vampire finale, and they made that vampire finale as they saw fit, if that makes sense. Rather than they weren't told how the story should end. With this year, the big difference here is because the updates are plugging into each other so close together. Because, you know, if you look at historical RuneScape content, it could tend to be months or even years before a particular piece of story got continued. We might do a story, and then a bit later there'd be a different story, and then, you know, a year later maybe one of the story threads would get touched on again and resumed. Which means you have a lot of time to process, you know, how was the last piece of story received, where we're going to go next with it. In this case, because we're telling a continuous story that will keep coming, you know, pieces of story are in development now that have had to start development before the previous piece of story has even been announced, let alone experienced by players. So there has to be a lot more communication in terms of, well, you know, if you want this character to appear, if you want this character to have reached a certain point in the character arc by this update, they need to have really been introduced in an earlier update and started that character arc. So there's a lot tighter communication across the updates than we would normally do, because that's just not normally been a consideration, because story tends to be more spread out. So what happened with Azanadra Quest is it started with essentially a fairly specific brief from me in terms of these are the plot points we need to hit. We're doing spoilers, I assume.
Yes, of course.
So the key plot points were... we find the Elder Halls with Azanadra, and then the point about Zaros's plan to steal Saradomin's crown, and then also a few, you know, Ariane needs to be in it, and so on and so forth. And then I handed that sort of collection of plot points to Mod Raven. So it's a fairly specific brief for a quest. It wasn't just make a quest. It wasn't even just make an Elder Gods quest. It was, here's a fairly specific collection of plot points to work with. He then wrote that up into an actual story, as opposed to just a collection of things that need to happen in the story.
So do you generally just write, like, when you do something like a quest, right? Do you tend to just first do, like, the story and then figure out, like, what, if you need to put puzzles in there, and you then put puzzles in there? Or do you come up with puzzles and then sort of fit them in a story? Like, how do you sort of combine the gameplay side with the, like, the narrative side?
It depends on the developer for that point specifically. It very much depends on the developer. So, if it's a puzzle focused designer, I think Mod Orion, for example, I think would probably come to a quest with the attitude of, what's the gameplay of this quest going to be? Or a more extreme example would be Mod Doctor, who has no interest in lore at all, but loves, like, Elemental Workshop style puzzles. If he was assigned to make a quest, his first question would be, well, what's the puzzle content of this quest going to be? Other developers like me or Mod Raven are coming very much from a, what's the story of this quest going to be? What's the, you know, and then we're fitting gameplay into that later. It depends on the developer what the quest objective is. I think over time I would say that quests have become more focused on, partly because of the devs who tend to work on them, partly also because, you know, they're our primary avenue of delivering lore. And so in that regard I would say that quests have become more lore focused over time, but that doesn't mean that puzzles and quests are inappropriate.
Would you say that that's also why Azanadra's Quest was a straight dialogue invention? We called it on the show effectively RuneScape's visual novel, so to speak, rather than having, say, a combat encounter thrown in or a puzzle here and there.
Yes. I mean, I think it's interesting that the quest ended up... So, obviously, we have a lot more content coming this year. And so in terms of sort of storyline and build up and investment of where our time would be best spent, we have an update coming up which is associated with the word dungeon, right? Trying to be as vague as I can. That implies a certain amount of environment work being spent, right? So in that regard, sorry, my thoughts just came in. We have to choose, you know, where to spend our time. And actually, the role of Azanadra's quest within the storyline is essentially like that little first build-up, Like it's like the first step on a larger journey that's going to get bigger and grander as we go along. So in that regard, it was always envisaged as it was envisaged essentially as a bottle quest. We've talked about bottle quests before, which are sort of small scale, sort of primarily dialogue focused, primarily character focused. We just ended up writing an absolutely tremendous amount of dialogue for it.
Yeah. Sirion, that's exactly what you said. You said this could be a bottle quest potentially.
Yeah, it essentially is like a huge bottle quest. And it sort of demonstrates, I think, what we can do, you know, without. I don't mean to dismiss the role of gameplay because that is also important. But it sort of demonstrates that a dialogue and lore focused quest can actually be quite cool. Although there was like I've heard feedback which I would totally agree with, which is we wouldn't want all quests to be like this. If all quests were essentially just massive strings of dialogue, without much in the way of gameplay, that would be a real shame. And I don't have any concerns that that's all we're going to be able to provide.
You have just put my concerns to rest on this, because that was one of my concerns going into the quest. And you know, with that, how do you balance that aspect of keeping the story railroaded to limit development cost with the aspect of, you know, giving the player real impactful choices in their quest to ensure that the character behaves in the way the player expects?
This is another slightly thorny topic. I talked before about quest requirements, which is one of the big controversies, and this quest has raised the question of sort of respecting previous choices as well. And it's a similar sort of development cost issue compared with the benefit that it brings. So what's a good example of this? So Slisker's Endgame really suffered for this. Slisker's Endgame was sort of the culmination of the Sixth Age, you know, it opened new stories, but it essentially concluded the story that started with Missing Presumed Death, which we can call sort of the Slisker's Game storyline, although it meanders a little bit, but it's essentially that concrete storyline. And that was very focused on choices. It was the same point with, you know, that same period had the world events, which were explicitly about choosing a side. It had the emissary content, which was explicitly about choosing a god. And the focus on that storyline was very much on choice. And my development ideology is that that way of approaching RPG development isn't a good fit for an MMO. Because, and actually, if I go a bit more extreme, it's not a good fit for RPGs at all. Because if you look at the RPGs, now, with the caveat that I still haven't played The Witcher 2 or Witcher 3, as I mentioned before, all of the other RPGs I've played, which have made a big deal about choice, including the Telltale series, including Mass Effect, don't actually care about the choices that you make. It's one of those almost game design, what's the right way of putting it, it's not a holy grail, it's like an impossible goal that people sort of chase. I can't remember what the idiom is, but it's like an impossible goal that people, it sounds easy to accomplish, but it's actually impossible.
Yeah,
because when you talk about providing choices and then respecting those choices with appropriate consequences, you're talking about multiplying up the development time, you know, twofold per choice.
Yeah, and we saw this in Desperate Times as well. And, you know, I think based on the way the stories have been going, there's going to be situations where this come in. And this kind of leads to the next question on this. Is there, would you say, maybe a canonical set of choices that you have in mind when designing a quest like as an Azanadra's quest that the player would have made in the past? Because I know we talked a bit about Death of Chivalry 2 being happening in universe, but the player hasn't experienced that yet, so maybe that plays into effect. I don't know.
In terms of canonical choices, I talked on a recent live stream about unhazeeling, which is the term we used for sort of undoing a narrative consequence that could result in the death of a character. So the obvious example would be, you know, Therisk and Fiara can die in the World Wakes,
right?
And so in that regard, so there isn't a canonical outcome for anything in particular, but for the most part, where the game world could be in two possible states, if it comes to it and we need to decide, we will choose the one that results in more content and possibility than less. So Fiara being alive means that we can use Fiara as a character, and Fiara being dead means that Fiara can't be used as a character. So if we have to choose between those two, we'd be likely to choose Fiara being alive. Several people on the live stream I gave recently, several people interpreted that as Fiara is going to be in the next content, which wasn't what I meant.
But, right, of course. But
if it comes to the point where, you know, we have an opportunity to use Fiara, I think we would probably choose to do so. So you could think about canonical choices in that regard. That where there has been a major disruption to the storyline in terms of, you know, is someone alive or dead, we would try to choose the version that allows us to at that time. Now, if we wanted, by contrast, if we wanted to do a, you know, a Fiara is Fiara's funeral quest, for example, if that was the content that we needed to do, we wanted a piece of Gothic's focused content and we wanted it to focus around a funeral for some reason, then at that point we could say, oh, Fiara's dead. And if you live through World Wakes, well, I guess she just died off camera and now she's dead and it's Fiara's funeral.
Right. So so it effectively keep as many branches of the decision tree open that the player could make just to ensure that we have the best options going forward on story.
The thing that we can't do, and I think this is kind of what people want us to do but just isn't practical, is have a Fiara's funerals quest that you can only access if Fiara died during the World Wakes. That's the aspect of it which is just impractical from a development point of view.
Yeah, that would get confusing.
It's not that we couldn't make that quest, but a quest that can only be accessed by X percent of people ever. It's not even they don't meet the requirements. It's, you know, you can't go back and change your choices in the World Wakes. The quest is permanently inaccessible. We simply wouldn't make that content.
It probably wouldn't be a good investment either, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not a good choice of content to make. So we'd make something else, which means Fiara gets put by the wayside because we have characters that aren't in a sort of Schrodinger's half-dead state to work with. So characters who've been Hazeeled, as we call it, you know, just aren't right. useful in that regard.
Cool. So besides these amazing design insights. We've got a few questions from listeners more sure. about the lore in this quest. So, we got a question from Probably Writing asking, how long was the whole thing with the Temple Knights on the boil, and how many of the Order ended up yeeting away with Zaros?
How long it is a while now. My development ethos is to seed as much lore as possible and then come back to it if it's useful. So my favorite place to seed lore that might be useful in the future is obviously RuneFest lore talks. So we first brought up the possibility of that in a RuneFest lore talk, well, 4 years ago now, something like that. But it was not at the time a plan in the sense that it was inevitably definitely going to happen. It was more, here is an option we have on the table, should it be useful? The time that we decided it was definitely going to happen, I guess, is probably about a year and a half ago, something like that.
Quite long ago.
Yes, something like that. What was the second half of the question?
How many of
the Temple Knights?
Yeah.
Yeah. The way I've been phrasing it is most of the Temple Knights and a few of the White Knights.
Interesting. And
I don't want to give a specific percentage or a specific number, because obviously that doesn't really help, but it's most of them. There's a few Temple Knights that remain, not just Sir Tiffy, but not very many of them. And then also a few White Knights went along with the Zerotians as well.
And kind of tangentially related, and we touched on this on our episode, were the Temple Knights the Inquisitors in the Writing on the Wall mystery?
Sorry?
Were the Temple Knights the Inquisitors mentioned on the Archaeology Writing on the Wall mystery?
That they do fit the bill quite well.
They do.
But I think you may have to wait for upcoming content to get confirmation of that.
All right. That question was from Probably Writing. Next one's from Miss Alaska. Is there a specific reason the light and shadow voices have made an appearance in the adventurer's head now rather than earlier or later? And on the quest in general, is there a line of dialogue that sticks out for you? As a favorite.
I'm trying to remember one. Hang on. So the question about the light and shadow voices, yes, there is a reason, but explaining what it is would require explaining too much about what they actually are.
Interesting.
Oh, mysterious. I like it.
And, you know, the wheels are starting to turn in the lore listener's head and in the clan questers' heads hearing this. So this is perfect.
So yes, but also I'm not going to tell you.
All right.
Is there a line of dialogue that sticks out in favor? Ooh, that's hard. Oh, yes. I have an anecdote.
Sure.
So, you know, Survey Lance.
Mm-hmm.
So he talks, if you want to know what he actually sounds like, he talks like General Melchett from Blackadder Goes Forth. So he sounds, he kind of goes, I run the Temple Knights, don't you know? That's how he sounds. And I'm looking, hopefully we're going to do like a fully voice acted live stream at some point.
Oh,
I'm
very much looking forward
to voice acting him. And the joke that he speaks the same as a human as he does as a demon is obviously one of my favorites. But he didn't originally talk like that. In my first draft of the dialogue, he was a Cockney. And Mod Raven didn't like it. He thought it detracted a little bit and it wasn't quite the right voice for him.
I'm just imagining you two in the discussion on this.
Yeah. He's going, I'm not sure he works as a Cockney. I'm like, oh, how about General Melchett then? Yeah, that's fine. Okay, all right. So I rewrote the dialogue as General Melchett and just took out all the Cockneyisms and put in ridiculous English aristocratisms instead. And anyway, but but there was one line that came out worse as a result of that. I can't remember what the updated line of it was. But he says, when he's talking to Sir Owen, and he says, you've always had that feeling of like there's someone behind the scenes controlling everything, and Sauron goes yes, and he goes, well, it's only me, isn't it? A bit of a wheeze. And it's an okay line, but the original version of that, which was in Cockney, was he goes, it's only bloody me, isn't it?
and I like that so much.
That's my favorite line of the quest, isn't. But yeah, the character does work better as General Melchett, and Raven was right. It's pretty.
And
funny.
You guys also said on a live stream there was a removed Eminem lyric in the quest. Do you want to share what that was?
Yes, it seems obvious to me, but no one has suggested it was when the shadow voices and the light voices are talking, and the shadow voice says, "We're your conscience." He says, "These voices, I hear them," quoting Eminem's "Guilty Conscience," of course. Which is literally about two voices talking in your head, a good voice and a bad voice. But yeah, people were suggested loads of good suggestions for things the shadow voice could have said that were Eminem lyrics. So I think he could probably speak entirely in Eminem lyrics if he wanted.
Sometimes it's such a shame that the game is not voice acted.
Yeah.
All right. That was a question from Miss Alaska. Rowan asks, why does the World Guardian never realize when they're being duped? How are we supposed to trust anyone if they all just double cross us? And if the point is we're being used to give... if the point is we're being used, give us some honest companions, please.
I saw some commentary on this, and I was intrigued by it because I've been... One of the things I'm on a bit of a warpath about is trying to get... consistency with older RuneScape content, if that makes sense. I've got a concrete example of that, actually, if you want it, which is when I was writing the Tsar section, the original plan for how that was going to go was that the Tok'ar were literally invading. The Tok'ar have progressed. You know, I wanted to show the Tsar things are happening in Tsar City, right? The storyline mm-hmm. is progressing, and so the plan was that they were going to attack and invade. And when I went, I wanted to make sure I got the voice of Tok'ar Hawk right, so I went back and reread over all of the existing Tsar dialogue to make sure I was getting that voice correct, to make sure it was consistent. And I actually ended up retconning it slightly, funnily enough, because he talks explicitly about being a hive mind. And that isn't quite the case in the earlier content, but it's a little inconsistent. So I was trying to sort of enforce consistency. And I talked to Stu a lot about that as we were doing that. Anyway, when having gone through all of that content from start to finish, I started to really doubt whether the Tok'ar would actually do that. It didn't seem... It felt to me the way that Tok'ar Hawk talked about the Tsar felt almost parental and almost sort of... He wanted them to gently and of their own volition come back to the fold, and he was prepared to push them, but not. I didn't get the impression he would kill. They hated the idea of Tok'al, right? That was awful to them. And so the idea that they would kill the Tsar seemed completely inappropriate to me. So I rewrote that whole section with that consistency. Sorry, I've forgotten what the original question was.
Why does the World Guardian never realize they've been duped?
Yes. So that to me was a point of character consistency. That's kind of who the World Guardian is. That's their personality, right? They're constantly getting tricked and duped. They're very trusting, and they're very like, if anyone asks them to do something, they're just like, yeah, I'll help. Of course I'll help.
One small favor.
I love to help out.
One small favor, huh?
All right. And,
yeah, exactly.
And you know, when you put it in that lens, that makes sense. And of course, there's other characters that are always guaranteed to be at the World Guardian side, your character's side. Thok comes to mind so far. And I think for, you know, a large part, we could also say perhaps the signature heroes as well. So, and I think that was a good call on including Arianne in the quest with that. And, you know, looking at it from this perspective, I think it all comes down to a question of having the World Guardian right the ship on this. And we're pretty much near the end of our section here, but is there anything you'd like to say before we wrap up about Azanandra's quest or the Elder God Wars or lore insights?
There's more coming. It feels, I think Azanandra's quest was quite almost overwhelming in the amount of lore it had, yeah. But it's not over yet.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, we said this coming into the podcast, 5 of 8 weeks in the first 2 months of the year, having something to deal with quests or mini quests. I'm trying to think the last time we heard of something like that, but it's been a real treat for us here, and I really enjoyed talking with you, Mod Jack, and we look forward to what's coming for the rest of the Elder God Wars this year. So thanks so much.
Yeah, no problem. It's been fun. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Next up, we're going to move on to the next Yak track. And, you know, this was another surprise. We didn't know it was going to be coming this soon. But this one is called Yak to the Basics, with the headline of Relive the Earliest Days of RuneScape and Grab Exclusive Rewards. And, you know, I was looking at this and I thought, you know, are we going to get maybe some old-fashioned cosmetic overrides that we've been asking for a long time? Or is it going to be just in particular a general theme of, you know, newbie style elements or something to that effect? And, you know, I think what we have on this offering is pretty good, if I have to say so myself. Because, you know, looking at this, this is very nostalgic, some of these things. I mean, we got a very traditional bronze plate body type style of armor. We have old wizard outfits as well, and mage's outfits. We also have, of course, what looks to be a Defender of Varrok style of armor. And, of course, we also have items going back and reminiscing on Tim and Crunchy, the two skeletons that were on the RuneScape login page way, way back when, amongst other things as well that you're able to pick up. You're also able to pick up some fairly neat-looking animated magic staffs that I think if you were going back in time, this is what the air and fire and earth and water staffs would have looked like if you were running RuneScape with the current engine that they have available, if you were doing that way back when in 2004. But overall, I think the thing I'm most looking forward to is the Tim and Crunchy gear. How about you?
You know, at first, I was not excited about the Siak track very much. I was kind of looking at it like, kind of plain, not really into it. And I'm like, you know, just, where's the smoke? There's no bells. I'm not hearing any whistles. I don't know. And I was curious what your take was going to be on it, because, you know, this stuff is kind of throwback.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't jump out. It's there. I think the mage's outfits look really neat, and the staves, and that's probably where I'd put it at. But, you know, it's not going to pop off the page like some of the Zaro stuff did or some of the archaeology stuff did in the Yak track before. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I have to be honest with everybody. I was really needing a Yak track at this point because I, of course, have finished the 120 archaeology grind. I have also, of course, done double XP live with Slayer, which, you know, kind of actually bored myself a bit.
Really?
Yeah, it did. It did. So I was just so pleased that a Yak track was on the way, and I was actually more looking forward to this one for the tasks than the actual rewards themselves, believe it or not.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah.
I think you've talked me into maybe liking, I'm going to do a few tasks now. Maybe work my way in one of those staffs. You know, it's weird though, this is one of the few that hasn't had a I don't think it has a pet, does it?
It does. It does.
It does?
It does. I believe there's the pet is the scorpion pet.
Okay, that's a throwback then, like the old dwarven cave.
Yeah,
or mine scorpions.
Maybe that's it. Target pet. Yeah, it's a pet. Yeah, there's a pet.
I didn't think it had one. Okay.
Yeah, it's a rat.
Oh.
And then the scorpion pet is called Pinchy.
Oh, hell.
So, there are pets with this one.
Okay.
And lots of things related to the mage arena. And, of course, the crunchy pet is, of course, the skeleton, which I think is, you know, what everybody wants. That's the level 50. Not the level 50, the task 50 reward for this one. So, I mean... Man. Just the fact that Crunchy is on there, you kind of have to go for it, I think.
Yeah, you're starting to slowly convince me. But.
Yeah, I'm not sure where Tim is, though. Oh, that's the Tim costume. So, Crunchy was the skeleton, Tim was the armor set, and you know that's something I always got confused, and Tim is wearing the old style bronze armor set as well, so I mean if you're a fan of bronze, that's going to be a fun thing for you to pick up as well. And you know what's actually a really interesting thing on this is that this Yak Track is actually brought Sirion into the Yak Track fold, and he's actually done some of these, and he has made the note that pretty much every other task has a skill and kill option.
Huh. Well, that's really cool.
And it goes up to every third task past task 15.
I mean, he would probably be like, I don't know, it's a way out of getting out of doing what you're supposed to do. So
oh, yeah.
I don't know if he would like it, but I think it's great.
No, he wants skill and kill to be an option on all the
tasks. That surprises me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, even at task 34, skill and kill is 30. So that's only...
not so bad.
Yeah, it's not too bad, right?
Yeah.
Because that's... Okay. What is that? 90 minutes of gameplay?
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. Because if you're playing...
Then it goes up
it's
to...
It's almost like you get punished for not doing a certain, you know, activity... Even though you're playing.
Then it goes up to 40 at task 42, which is 2 hours worth.
Okay.
45 at 46, 20 at 48. And, you know, this is where it really starts to lean its way out. Or, sorry, not 48. At, 50 is 50. So
token time?
Yeah.
That's when you hope you hit some treasure hunter tokens.
Yeah, maybe.
You might want to buy a bond, you know?
Yeah, well, Premier Club members got a free Yak Track skip this month.
Well, in addition to everything I'm going to need
so,
it.
You know, task 50, 150 minutes of gameplay. That's not even 3 hours worth for task 50.
Yeah,
if you just want to do it that way. And it seems as though that some of the tasks aren't as grindy as well, which is also a very welcome thing from previous Yak Tracks. Lots of choice involved in the tasks too, so that's good, I think. I don't know, we'll see how this one goes, because you know, I think I was on record, did I make this clear over the last one that ran over Christmas, that I felt as though that one was a little bit grindy?
Probably.
Yeah, because I felt that way when it came to that one, and I said I hope it changes for this time, and I think it has. We'll see how things go as we move on. But I'm already at let's see what task am I at? I am currently at. Oh, that's interesting. I'm currently on task 13. So
yeah, you've gotten a little start.
Yeah, and you know,
out the gate.
And you know what the real interesting part about this is that for the bulk of the ones I've done so far, I've just done it with archaeology, because I'm back doing archaeology. I'm going for potion recipes at Orphan.
For money or what?
No, I want some of them. Like, I want the...
But how would you not have them already?
Because keep in mind, when Orthon came out, I had already passed those levels, so I didn't really spend too much time at Orthon. I just basically got the... I just got the collections done, and that was it, at the various sites. So I didn't spend too much time at the Orthon dig sites.
Okay.
As I was going on, yeah. But, I mean... For anybody who's ever wanted Tim and Crunchy to come back and have a presence in RuneScape 3, this is the time for this with these Yak Tracks. And you know what? What better way to celebrate 20 years of RS? So I'm very pleased with this one so far. We'll see how the grind goes as we progress on through it. So,
well, don't worry, Shane. If the grind is too much... If you feel like you just can't make it, know that you'll be able to buy it with oddments.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right?
No big deal.
Yeah. And, you know, I saw a discussion in Clan Quest about this, about whether or not that was a good thing. Because, you know, some people are saying, why should I go and do Yak Track now if the rewards I want are going to come out for oddments in a few months? And, you know, that's a perfectly fine point to make. If you want to wait a few months, go for it. Just do it with augments instead.
I don't know. Is Yak Tracks a little more than rewards, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Also, of course, get the protein boxes. You get.
You get to do different stars, stuff. You get an excuse to go and do
right.
things and change your routine.
Except when you get asked to do agility or herb lore, right?
Well, I'm not changing routine for that. I can't afford it, and I'm not. Not until we get Therion's rework anyway.
Yeah. Alrighty. Let's move on. This week was also Ninja Strike 20, but in the patch notes they also made note of client crashes and in particular stability updates that were happening. And there was an update on Monday with the main game update that aim to fix some of these, and then there was another update on Tuesday, I believe, that tried to fix a few more of them. So things relating to game crashes and client stability are being worked on. They're not, you know, necessarily being brushed away. We'll talk about things that are still live and problems as of recording in just a little bit, but let's move on to Slayer Ninja Strike 20 right now. And this was a bit of a surprise to me at first, but I think it makes sense looking at it that... Machina, I've never known how to say that one, and Vanaka have switched places in the pecking order. Vanaka will now assign tasks to players who are level 30 combat and above, while Machina will assign tasks to players who are level 50 and above. Their task lists have been changed to accommodate their new level bandings, and Vanaka has moved out of the Edgeville dungeon just south to the ruins of Edgeville Bank. Mandris has also joined him there, migrating from the Edgeville Bank. This really makes sense, doesn't it, looking at it? Because...
I couldn't remember who these people were.
They're like the first couple Slayer Masters you use. You went to the Berthorpe one, then you went to the one in Caniphus, which was Mazjana, and then you went back to Vanaka. But, you know, to access...
That one I remember. I don't remember the other.
Because, of course, to access Caniphus, you need to do Priest and Peril. Which, you know, anybody who is doing Slayer, that's a bit of a wall in front of them. So it makes sense to have the lower level Slayer Master somewhere like Edgeville.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because I must have obviously grinded until I could be Vanakula? Vanaka?
Right. Whatever, and something like that. It's based on combat level, so it doesn't really matter what your Slayer level was. I don't believe? Or is that the case? Do you need specific Slayer levels to access Slayer Masters, or is that just combat levels?
I don't remember.
We should know this, but it's just been so long ago since everything is unlocked. No, you do require Slayer levels.
Okay.
So, Vanaka, Mazjana, and the Fairy Woman are all at level 1 Slayer. You unlock Duradel, or the other one, at level 50. The Ancient Cavern Slayer Master, they don't have their names in the Slayer Guide, are at 75. The Prift Slayer Master is at 85.
Okay.
So there you have it. But it makes sense to do that because you definitely don't want that wall for people who are just starting out. And I had an idea on this. Could Slayer be going free to play?
Oh, maybe kinda that's
like
it.
Kind of like how Fletching did.
I mean, maybe, and it would be a good skill to do that. But because, like, when you think about it, a quest, putting Slayer content behind a quest, never had any qualms about that. Half of the skills behind quest. If you think about, you can't get Slayer points until you do smoking kills.
Right.
Which requires a bunch of different desert quests and stuff like that. So that kind of makes me go, okay, well, what is the reason? Because this would be, if
this
they
would
care
have been
about
a good
that,
time to change that as well. You know, with the hand waving about other quests. I mean, sure, you could maybe find another way to lower some requirements on smoking kills as well. But I mean, Slayer's been out so long that I just wonder if it's time for it to go free to play.
Well, I think it's just it makes sense on an appeal level. Like when you're going out to mobile, when you're looking for stuff like that, Slayer is a good skill. You go out and kill mobs. That's a good skill for RPG. Or,
yeah.
You know, an MMO.
Yeah.
It's it makes sense to me. It's not your favorite, but I think it's pretty consistently ranks up there as a favorite skill, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And just for the record, smoking kills requires Ichthyrin's little helper and the Restless Ghost. Well, Ichthyrin's little helper needs Gertrude's cat and Diamond in the Rough, and Diamond in the Rough requires Stolen Hearts.
That's what I'm saying. And look at what you get from Slayer points. Like, it's literally half of the skill.
Yeah. And, you know, if you had shipped Slayer with the Slayer points in the collection log, you're almost at a point at which you're at an archaeology level of interaction mm-hmm. with it. So maybe there is an argument to be made that Slayer points should be peeled away as a reward from this quest. In addition to making the skill free to play.
Might be time.
It might be time.
Might be time.
Might be time. But I don't know. That was just a passing thought I had. People can, of course, feel free to agree with or disagree with on that. But other changes. Slayer Masters will now recommend the next best Slayer Master to go to if you don't meet their combat or Slayer level requirements. Once again, more guiding the player of where they should go. Then this was a very interesting patch note. Jacqueline Manslaughter, formerly of the Burthorpe and Taverly area, has moved to Lumbridge to begin training new players as full-fledged Slayer Masters. As a full-fledged Slayer Master, and her assignments can be completed in the Lumbridge area. And this was another point that was on the free-to-play hint, is that, okay, we're putting a Slayer Master in Lumbridge now. Free-to-play, perhaps?
Free to play on mobile launch.
Uh-huh. There you go. And Turiel and Spraya will now only assign Slayer tasks to creatures that can be found in the Burthorpe and Taverly areas to ease new players into the skill. Ease new players into the skill.
Uh-huh.
A member skill.
I wonder if they did anything with, the partner Slayer. Because that was only good early on.
Oh, the co-op Slayer.
Like at low, yeah, the co-op. Like at low levels, medium.
Ooh,
anyway.
That would be interesting to try. As far as I can tell, no, they didn't change anything on that.
Okay, but but it's better for newer players.
Yeah, the
way it is.
So, I mean, that's there. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Okay. And a bunch of quality of life improvements as well, including moss giants now attack with melee and are weak to fire spells. Fire giants now also attack with melee and are weak to water spells, and more black bears have awoken from hibernation near the body altar. And on the moss and fire giants, I believe previously they were not weak to their magical counterpart. I think they were only weak to the melee side, if I remember correctly.
I don't want to remember doing.
I remember killing lots of fire giants. Lots of fire giants.
Down in Brimhaven?
Tunnels under the wilderness.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Yeah. Chaos tunnels. And the crocodiles east of Sophidim have had their HP halved. And let's hope they don't get too snappy about it.
That's good. Those things were.
They were
pain
tough.
In the butt.
They were tough. I always skipped them.
Yeah.
All right, let's just roll into the patch notes since we're on this bent here with this. Abyssal demons will no longer teleport the player around sporadically while in manual combat mode.
See, I don't think I like that.
No, because that was one of the unique little abilities of the abyssal demon.
Exactly. I was like, huh? What? Why? Like, is manual that bad? They've got to entice people? I mean, I don't know. I don't get it.
And based on this, if you're in Revolution, it still should teleport you around. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Vengeance group can now be used even when no one will benefit from it to make it consistent with other vengeance spells. Okay. The managing miscellanea reward interface has been brought into line with the standard reward interfaces found in the game. So this is, of course, things like the crystal chest. And higher-tiered lecterns in the POH study now increase the speed at which teleport tablets and other spell tablets are created.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we always forget about these. And once again, this is a very important part of the game for Iron Man characters and very important part of the game for people leveling up. So.
Well, and every once in a while, there have been gold rushes on those.
Oh, interesting.
A few and far between, but yeah, every once in a while.
What about the Peaches tablet? Bones to Peaches.
I don't know. I'm unfamiliar with that niche.
I remember there used to be quite a rush around those ones back in the day.
Huh. Okay.
Visual fixes, clan chat colors, and other chat colors have been fixed. Finally. I don't know about you, but this was something that was really bothering me and made it really hard to read the chat while this was broken.
Oh, was it really hard to see, Shane?
Well, basically what would happen is that the entire line of text would be the same color, whereas, you know, you can choose the text color of, you know, the friends chat and the private chat and the clan chat. The entire list up to that first bracket point would just be the same color. Whereas normally you have the white brackets and then the blue clan chat, friends chat marking or the white to and from when you're dealing with a private message. So it made it hard to read. It really did. So I'm glad that's been fixed. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I was messing with you because it was nice to be able to differentiate, and now it. Or it started to run together.
Oh, okay, I see. All right.
Without the contrast, you know?
Right, yeah.
Like, the color doesn't matter so much, but the contrast was good.
Right, and I guess that's very important to you, the way you work with your right. screen. Fix an issue causing the draw distance option in the graphic settings to appear twice.
Huge.
Fix some issues with the settings overlay panel on the login screen. Fixed an issue where the Steam client, with the Steam client, that could cause the login UI to go missing.
Uh-oh.
And NPCs are no longer clipping through environment pieces during a cutscene and as an Azanadra's quest. They also fixed the randomized button on the character creator and reduced CPU overhead while idling in the lobby. That was a bit of a weird problem, seeing CPUs. Usage spike up for no apparent reason, just sitting in the lobby. Info
secret
boxes.
Miners.
Yeah.
It's the Cambridge mob again, man.
Unfortunately, we're not mining Bitcoin anymore on CPUs. Info boxes should now consistently appear above the examine target with no offset. An issue getting notification dots in the lobby for unread messages had been fixed. And this is, of course, related to a change they pushed for the mobile client that percolated its way over to the desktop client. There was also apparently an error fixed that would happen when you're adding memories to the blank observation during an Audra's quest. And players are once again able to reach the Praetorium war table in the Karadet dig site, as well as fixing an issue that was preventing the correct total of number of bonds owned by the user to be displayed. And Azanandra will no longer appear near the world gate after completing Azanandra's quest.
So we really aren't friends anymore.
No, apparently not. Apparently not. So, that's the patch notes for the week. I think we ought to thank some Patreon supporters for this episode because, you know, what we do here would not be possible without them. So as it's the first week of the month, we're going to thank some extra people this month. This week I'd like to thank Andrew C., Arvid Zell, Brock H., Cameron, Kristen S., Cook Me Plocks, Diana, Duramax, Gabrielle, Guy Lafleur, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., GMM, John P., Keski, Kevin G., Kyle, Lucky Ducky, Malinoric, Nora, Parnassius, Rastafa, Ricky A., Ryan P., Soupfinder, Stabeev, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., Zachary K., and Zant. Thank you all for your support. It truly does mean the world to us, and our Patreon members have just been involved in the process of choosing our next monthly bit, which I can report is going to be looking at skilling bosses, in particular how Big Game Hunter has the potential to pivot itself into a skilling boss style experiment. So you can expect that next week. We'll be delivering that to you guys. And of course, if you want to gain access to that or the entire back catalog of monthly bits for that matter, you can subscribe for as little as $1 a month. And in doing so, you of course help fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. For $3 a month, you'll receive a special VIP rank on Discord and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, plus high quality stereo versions of the show, in addition to everything else. And for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to build the clip show at the end of the year. And of course, what we're working towards right now, you know, should we ever reach that $500 a month tier, we'll subject ourselves to some pains, undertaking the Hot Ones challenge. I think we got Parnassius involved in that one. And, you know, it's going to be interesting if we ever get there, eh?
We got someone else to share our pain, though, so that's great. We're still we're taking more volunteers, too.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And, you know, anybody who wants to step in as we do that, we'll make a special video edition of the podcast on there.
Yep, it's going to be hot wings and tears.
So if you want to learn more about that, just check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone. You guys are going to find this odd, but this is where things get really
weird
this week. And, you know, weird is what we like to do from time to time here on the podcast, but I don't think we wanted this weird with this. And this is in relation to a bug that's been going around for quite some time in the Elite Dungeons, in particular an exploit that was allowing players to skip up to the final boss. And there is a post on this, and, you know, this was a post made by Mod Hooli. It was made on the Reddit subreddit. I checked the forums, and there was nothing on the forums. I checked the front page. There was nothing on the front page about this. And I think that, you know, this is part of just a general push and part of a bigger issue, but these kind of posts need to be made on the official forums as well for people who don't want to go to the subreddit can find them there in a general community management segment. Now, when it comes to this actual bug, they say they plan to deliver a fix as soon as they can, and the current deployment target is March 15th. And, you know, from the time they posted this, it's almost 2 weeks' time. 2 weeks' time.
But don't do it, because you'll be in big, big, big trouble, mister.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't see the logic in posting something that is detailing a bug that, you know, if you really want to, you can go on online, look at other communities, and find how it happens. So I don't think drawing attention to it is a smart thing to do, especially when there's, you know, close to 2 weeks' time.
Could this have been just essentially damage control, in the sense that I bet you could go to a certain website and see a bunch of videos that have been made about this particular exploit.
I mean, you look this up on YouTube and you're going to find guides on how to do it.
Right, so does that then force their hand to be like, crap, we got to say something because it's out and it's gaining traction?
Well, I mean, everybody can see it with their own eyes that a bug exists.
It kind of almost it reminds me in a way of the God Wars Dungeon 2 bugs. You remember those? Where you could just safe spot.
Yeah. Yeah, and they were fixed, you know, very quickly.
Ish. But people made a ton of money. What I'm saying is, it's the PVMers out there. It's your guys' fault. No, I'm just kidding. But, I mean, we run into these bugs, I think. I don't know if it's just mechanically or... I don't know. Maybe there's not enough... Like, what kind of bug could we get in Skillion that we could exploit and make this kind of money?
Right.
Like, what would that even look like?
Right. And see, I don't know that that's a possible thing. Yeah. And, you know, I've seen the way the bug works. And if you're looking at it, it's something that you know you're doing if you're doing it. The chances of walking into this by accident are very, very tiny. So.
No, you know it's bad when toxic places look at something to go, oh man, that's really toxic. That's bad.
Right. And they talked about the question of enforcement next. And anyone abusing this bug, they say, will be subject to severe repercussions for your account. They'll be taking action against players who already abused the exploit. And they have said, and I'm not sure you should have said this, they also have a hotfix on standby to limit Elite Dungeons to solo story mode.
What's the downfall of talking about it?
Like, what do you mean?
I don't know. I mean, you said you're not sure they should have talked about it, but I don't.
Well,
see a difference.
And see, that's a thing. I mean, by bringing attention to it, anybody who wants to see it and, you know, really doesn't have that high of a detachment to their RS account can Google this and figure it out. So.
I guess it depends on how much, how much content is Elite Dungeons behind? If this is something you could start an alt and have it within an hour or
two. I mean, you could probably do it within a weekend.
Yeah, that's a lot of trouble.
Yeah. And
quick bug.
But here's the thing. I think if you're going to talk about this bug and if you're going to put it out there and you're going to have the questions of repercussion, it shouldn't just be rollbacks. anybody who abuses this going forward should be permanent banned.
Oh, and yeah, anybody that's who, the consensus.
And anybody who has abused it in the past should also be permanent banned. Except for maybe the person that first stumbled upon it.
I'm sure they can figure out if there were people what that... I'm sure that they can do things case by case if they want to.
Yeah, they definitely can. They definitely can. But the point I want to be clear on is that I think anybody who willingly abuse this or abuses it going forward should just be permanently banned.
Well, how many times do we have to go through this?
Right?
I mean, if you don't know by now.
Exactly.
If you don't know me by now, you should never, ever, ever bug abuse. Listen to me.
Well, there you go. And my final niggle with this, is it really necessary to play good cop, bad cop with the community and say, hey, if you guys make a bigger issue out of this, we're going to, shut the Elite Dungeons down except for solo story mode? Is it really necessary to say that? If it comes to that point, just do it.
Yeah, that's probably not a good threat. Probably permanent ban as a explicit threat would have been better than this. Is the whole, this is like you're getting in trouble because your brother's acting a fool. Like, come on, man.
Right. Right. Or the other kids in the class won't shut up, so we're keeping you all in because of this. So you shouldn't have to say that. If it becomes that big of a problem, just do it.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah, and I mean, was it – and you see, this isn't a point of data we don't have. Was it getting to the point where there was so much back talk and so much discussion going on in the community that this was being actively used that they needed to go out and say, hey, we actually know about this. Please don't do it anymore. Was it at that point? Or could we just have, carried on and, not admitted there was a bug there?
I don't know, man. I mean, I've seen more than one headlines that says 40 mil an hour. Doo-doo-doo.
Right.
Check this out.
But shouldn't it be common sense to not do it? To not abuse it?
Yeah, you should, but,
We also did have a live stream this week detailing a new PVM encounter that's going to launch next week, the Rex Matriarchs. Mm-hmm. Finally a boss for you and me.
Finally. Yeah. Finally. I mean, I like where they say they're putting it in the difficulty level of bossing.
And to be clear, this is can be thought of as a successor to the Dagonoth Kings. It's going to have difficulty levels on par with God Wars Dungeon 1 and God Wars Dungeon 2.
Right. So I'm definitely liking that. And at first I thought, oh, well, the reward isn't, a big deal or anything, so it'll be cheap. You're probably going to be doing this, just for kind of fun at this level. But
a laid back experience.
We're talking a pre-show that it sounds like it actually might be a little bit better than what I was giving it credit for.
Yeah, so there's a number of rewards for this one. Of course, we'll talk more about this and mechanics next week on the show. I hope to have David on for that one. But what you, in effect, get from this is upgrades to the Dagonoth King rings and a fourth ring that is just a general combat buff as well. And there's also Lanikea's Spear, which is a level 82 spear with 90 strength and 75 accuracy. They say it's kind of similar to the Dragon Rider Lance. And I talked with some people about this, and the general consensus is that this is going to be a good, cheaper alternative to the Nox Scythe. In particular, because it's got Halberd Length on it. So.
And since it's not made of Zaroth components,
Yeah, it's not going to spike up to the roof, right?
Right, yeah.
So that should be good fun. All the components to make it will be tradable, so you can, of course, farm it yourself, or you can just pick it up on your own. But when it comes to the matriarchs themselves, there's one for each of combat type. You can take them on one by one, or you can take them on all at the same time as well. One is poison-based, one is melee-based, and one is electricity-based. And, of course, the poison one is ranged. The melee one, Orichalca, is the melee-based one with the Orichalca plates on it. And then there's one as well, Fentraken, I believe was the name. That's the electric magic-based one. And these can, in the lore sense, be thought of as the precursor to Raksha, as in Dragonkin experiments that the Dragonkin made that weren't nearly as sophisticated as Raksha's final form.
Have we ever had electricity?
The Kilowatt.
Kilowatt, okay.
Yeah, Kilowatt. The Warrior's Champion's Ring, while affected by a bleed, will gain a 3% critical chance boost and plus 30 strength bonus and plus 5 prayer bonus, and synergizes well with the Spear of Annihilation because of what that does for bleeds. So that's going to be a really good one. The Range Stalker's Ring gives you a 3% critical chance bonus while using a bow. And they said they did this because, as it is right now, crossbows get enough love in the game already. So they want to have that extra little something for bows.
Yeah, I think they do. They need something other than just the additional range.
And then the one for magic, the Channeler's Ring. Channeled abilities gain a 4% crit chance bonus, and each hit adds an extra 4% critical chance bonus for a maximum of 16%. I like the way that one sounds.
Yeah, I'm wondering how much these are going to be used. Like, are these going to become the Ringscape? Like, are these going to be switched on and off?
Right, and here's the thing.
Are they even good enough to switch?
Well, I mean, the PBMers like are certainly interested in this because following this announcement, the rings from the Dagonoth Kings spiked up in price.
Yeah, it was funny. Between the last story and this story this week, it made me... You remember the ring bug, the Dagonoth ring?
No, I don't.
It was like millions of them were being like duped and stuff.
Oh.
They used to be worth a lot of money. Or not a lot, but decent, you know.
Right.
And then they remember when it just hit rock bottom? Like, because
it's being dumped
on the G.
Right.
Just crazy.
Yeah, and this is in effect the opposite of that. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But, of course, we'll have a full rundown of all this next week on the podcast. As I mentioned, hope to have David on for this. And, you know, I actually hope to kill these myself, too. So.
Well, you have a spear, don't you?
Yeah, I have a Spear of Annihilation, and I also have a Nox Scythe as well. So, I mean, that's a good option. I also have Ascension Crossbows now.
Well, there you go. I'd throw on some Masterwork, take that spear,
and away
just
we go,
punch
right?
everything in the face. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And one other fun thing about this before we move on is that these ones will not be 100% immune to their combat triangle strength like the Dagonoth Kings are. So well, you'll still be able to damage them, but it won't be as fast.
Right, but you saw, like, there was a, I think there's an achievement if you take them down under,
right.
like,
Extinction seconds. Event, kill them all within 5 seconds of each other.
Yeah, so, I mean, it can't be too bad. I mean, that's quick.
No.
I mean, I know that's, like, elite style, but come on.
Yeah. Of course, there's also boss pets as well. Little miniature dinosaurs that everybody's always wanted, right?
Oh, damn it. Now we're going to now. Damn. I want a Dino.
Yeah, that'd be fun. They also said that minimum tier for this one, you know, just say tier 75 plus equipment would probably be good. God Wars Dungeon 1 or God Wars Dungeon 2, 75 equipment would work with this. So, and there is, I'll just end it on this note. They said this is the seed and hopefully we'll watch this area grow. So I'm wondering, what the heck does that mean?
Raids. Anachronia raids.
Ooh, that would be
starting
interesting.
Off with God Wars level 1 and 2, creeping up to Araxer level, creeping up to Tellus level, creeping up to that Yokohama level, or whatever she is.
Yokohama? I think you mean Yakimaru.
Yakimaru, there you go.
That looks to be a bit of a boss that hopefully will be good enough for you and I. And I might even go visit the Dagonoth Kings this weekend, or maybe even Grigorovic to dust off the edges. Is that how you're supposed to say that? Grigorovic,
I guess.
Yeah. But in any case,
yeah, with the Russian, Shane, it feels like it should have some Russian to it.
Exactly, right? Like that guy who used to come around to the Spring Fair. Oh, that was hilarious. Comrade Vladimir in RuneScape. Anyway, so we're going to move on to our picks of the week right now. And I got to share something that is, you know, for all intents and purposes, my backyard, because this is only a few hours away from me. And this is something that pretty much every Albertan has the privilege to experience. And people from all over the world come every year to see the natural wonders of the Canadian Rockies. And there was a really wonderful skyscape that was shown off over the past week and a half. In particular, at night, a local photographer known as Paul Zyka took some photos of people ice skating on the frozen mountain lakes at night, long exposure, so you can actually see the people's headlights lighting up the entire area, lighting up the ice below them, that in the summer is actually a very turquoisey color, and you could see that and see how clear it is on the ice. And this is just something that absolutely looks surreal, and you would think that all these photos that were taken were manufactured, but these were photos that were taken in the last couple weeks here in the Canadian Rockies at night. And, you know, this is something that we have effectively in our own backyard, and it's so very wonderful. And many people see these and they can't believe that they're real. So I wanted to show these off as pick of the week. It's in a Canadian news publication called Maclean. So you can find a link to that in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. Absolutely amazing, amazing photos here. There's a collection of five of them that you can have a look at.
That's cool.
Yeah.
How cold does it get there? Like, are you guys ever worry about just jumping on some ice and going to town?
Oh, I mean, it's cold enough in the winter that you get ice that's, you know, meter or so thick, right? So, I mean, it's fine.
A meter?
Oh, yeah.
That's like 3 feet, right?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, I mean, it goes, there's a good number of months where it goes no lower than minus 10 Celsius, which for those listening in the U.S., that's 14 degrees Fahrenheit. And because of the altitude that these lakes are at, they don't melt until May.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So you can go there in April, May, and you can still see ice on the lakes.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, January, February, yeah, still the depths of winter in the Canadian Rockies, and it's perfectly fine to be skating on a lake like that.
Okay, I bet that is something to see. Can you ever see the Northern Lights
absolutely.
Oh, wow.
You know, you do need to go out of the city for it, but you can, of course, see them with the naked eye, and the further north you go, the better.
Wow, cool.
Yeah. So lots of fun things like that relating to astronomy that you can see in our high northern latitudes here. So that's the pick of the week. You can find these pictures at update.rsbnb.com. What do you got for us?
I've got a game this week that I never thought I would be into playing. The last game I played like this was from back on Super Nintendo. So it's been a while. But I picked up PGA Tour 2K. I don't know. It was on sale. I did it on a whim. Just thinking, oh, I remember, you know, that the whole Tiger Woods thing was a big deal, and I've been looking for different games that would be good fits for me to play, like be able to, you know, play from the couch just using my glasses. And I thought maybe golf might be a good pick there. So I picked it up, and it's, yeah, surprisingly fun. I played a round last night. I mean, I was terrible at it. I didn't know you could get a quadruple bogey, but apparently,
oh yeah, you can. I mean, at that point, they just write you in for the maximum and move on to the next hole.
Yeah. So, but it was a lot of fun. And like I said, the cool thing is the way that, you know, the swing works. I can actually zero right in if I'm wearing my eSight. So, yeah, just zoom right in and get a perfect stroke every time. I'm pretty good at hitting the fairways and everything, but putting is just a disaster. Very good. Like, he'll ding off of the flag, and that's if I'm lucky.
Yeah. And you know, that's actually the part that I always had trouble with. I haven't gone for a long time, but I was always good at the long drive and the fairway shots, but the putting was always a bit more difficult for me.
Yeah, and I don't get it, because, like, we go to putt-putt. I do all right there, but
Yeah, and
yeah, you know, I guess I'm not so good at reading green.
Part of it is that you got to really take your patience with the putting. And you got to – it really comes down, as I understand it, to the alignment of your feet at that point. And you got to make sure that your shoulders are aligned with your feet. That way then you can use your feet as kind of a line to which way you're going to go. And if there's anything off with that alignment, your ball is going to go – elsewhere. And of course, then you got to hit it straight on in the center, else you're going to curve the ball, and lots of interesting dynamics that come to play. And, you know, as it is, I find games like golf and billiards and pool really interesting to that, because at the core, they're nothing but simple physics.
Right. Yeah. I think that is something that's appealing about them. Not that I was ever great at physics or geometry or whatever, but it's easy to understand. That's what I was telling my wife. I'm like, it's really easy to play hard to, like, master, right? Like, or at least it was last night. I don't have a lot of time in it. I got, you know, a few hours, but it was fun.
Sounds good. And it's currently 50% off on the Steam store.
Mm-hmm. That was the whole reason I thought, I'll take a chance.
Nice.
I'll pick it up, yeah.
Nice. But, you know, one thing everybody else took a chance on was that they were going to utilize their Double XP Live like we've never seen before. We got the final cleanup on those right now. So, starting off, Hound Ears got 99 Invention on March 3rd. Vivian got 99 Strength on March 2nd. Then on the 1st, we have Ariel with 99 Fishing, Defense, Summoning, Crafting, Strength, Prayer, Woodcutting, and Mining. Free Keski got 99 Fletching. Jade Gizmo got 120 Fishing. Silly Cat 98 got 99 Archaeology. Simply Scales got 99 Mining. And The Quiver got 99 Crafting. Then we also have Vivian with 99 Attack, and Xenon Ray with 120 Archaeology on March 1st. Moving back into February, we got Black Nexican with 120 Defense on the 28th. Data 479 with 99 Archaeology. Garageo got 120 Archaeology also on the 28th. Lazy Colonel got 99 Construction and Smithing. Madhouse SC got 99 Invention. Nordic Falcon got 99 Cooking on the 28th. Spy Who-Man got 99 Dungeoneering on the 28th. Surge Aurora got 120 Invention, 99 Crafting, and 99 Firemaking on the 28th. Then we have Chimney Lax with 99 Cooking on February 27th.
All right, and picking up from there, we had Deltor Polo with 99 Thieving on the 27th. We have Drizzen with 120 Defense on February 27th. We have Faroque Kratos with 99 Fletching on the 27th. We have Venska with 99 Smithing on the 27th. We have God Shaman with 99 Slayer on the 27th. We have Gaila Fugler with... Oh! Is that a Gilafir?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Gilafir with 99 Runecrafting on the 27th. Kiki with 99 Herblore on the 27th. We have Luke PPP with 99 Divination on the 27th. We have Max Quest Points with 99 Slayer and 99 Crafting on the 27th. We had Nordic Falcon with 99 Farming and 99 Crafting on the 27th. We have Obi Denobi. I love it. Obi Denobi with 99 Summoning on the 27th. We have Rune Dragon with 99 Divination on the 27th. We have Shamrock Soup with 99 Construction on the 27th. Shanty Tuesday with 99 Strength on the 27th. We have Shut Up 685 with 99 Mining on the 27th. We have Psyoasis with 120 Archaeology, woo, with 99, on February 27th. We have Spy Woman with 99 Smithing on the 27th. Surge Aurora with 99 Hunter on the 27th. Tim 2 with 120 Cooking on the 27th. And 120 Cooking again
that
on
seems
the 27th.
To be that cooking bug we had last week that made it appear twice. I don't know more.
Yeah, I mean, it's cooking a big meal. Then we move on to Silver Wiz 9 with 120 Slayer on the 26th. We have
I say Xanthan Gum. I think that's the simplest way to say that one.
All right, with 99 Cooking and again and ranged, both on the 26th. Elder Onyx with 120 Summoning on the 25th. Kiki with 99 Fletching on the 25th and Cooking. We have Lord Dusty with 120 Attack. Mahian with 99 Herblore on the 25th. We have Shamrock Soup with 99 Attack on the 25th. And we have Zazakan with 99 Invention on the 25th.
Nicely done. Just a couple of other ones. New Hero got 120 Archaeology on the February 26th. And Riora got 99 Smithing on the 25th as well. So well done. Well done all across the board, everyone. And, you know, if you want to be a part of this, if you want to help read out the achievements next time we do one of these long runs and you want to help us at RSB and Update, you want to help us on the show, or you want to write for RSBNB Informer, just visit update.rsbnb.com/help and fill out our help wanted form. You know, we have options from guest hosting the podcast, writing articles, helping with graphical work, or if you think you might have some other skill set that would be useful, you can fill that in as well. We just ask what kind of RuneScape player you are. We have slots for skillers, questers, PVMers, completionists, and pretty much anything else under the sun. And we ask for your RuneScape name and a method of contact. That can be anything from like a Discord handle to your Twitter to an email, or even just your RuneScape name, and we'll contact you there. So update.rsvb.com/help if you want to help us out with the show. Your help would be greatly appreciated around our community. And, you know, I think we can start wrapping this up. But before we do that, we kind of just have to talk a little bit about what we've been up to this week, haven't we, eh? So what have you been up to?
Yeah. Well, I've spent my double XP getting artifacts because I've just been on this 120 grind. And I got to say, finally, I'm even though I thought like the cosmetics of the Yak Track this time were lackluster, I'm glad it's here, because after just about a year, I finally started to get just a little bit doing archaeology. So I need to take a quick little Yak Track around for a minute before I finish out this grind. But I was able to make it to 115, and I still got probably, gosh, like 300-350 artifacts that I'll have to restore.
Youch.
So yeah. So getting there, but
it's,
you know,
it's really been the gift that's kept on giving, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, it's just I've been doing it for a year. You know
right.
what I mean?
So yeah,
like,
and I mean, a year is a long time, and you definitely should take a break somewhere in there, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, with the exception of a quick, you know, go collect energy for archaeology, that's really the only breaks I would take. I mean, I did a few Yak Tracks, but surprisingly, we had a lot of Yak Track tasks that you could do while doing archaeology, so I was doing that as much as I could.
Yeah, it's really beneficial.
Yeah, but now I'm like, yeah, I'll go do the other task just to change it up.
Yeah, and I mean, the skill and kill ones are also good to have as well, so that's good. That's good. Okay. As for me, well, summing up my double XP, I went from 103 to 108 Slayer. A good portion of that was with Slayer dummies, I must say. And, you know, I just couldn't get into Slayer, Tanis. I just couldn't get into it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's different strokes, right?
But, yeah. I mean, I've been using Lanikea. I've been going for the big tasks. I've been... Abyssal Demons are great. Dark Beasts are great. But nothing really that special has come up at Lanikea and when I was doing it. So I'm not exactly sure.
You gotta get your gemstones, man.
I gotta get my what? Sorry?
Gemstone dragons. Get those Hydrix dragons.
Right, and I have the level to do those now, and they just haven't been assigned yet.
They're hard to capture, I mean,
yeah.
But God. So good.
Yeah, and add them to the prefer list when I get them. I definitely will be doing that. Yep. So I think this Yak Track time coming around, if a Slayer task comes up, I'll do that. Maybe I'll even go do some PVM. Who knows? But I have also, of course, I had to find a way to get back to archaeology. So I'm going for the Holy Groverload potion recipe, because I didn't get that on my first run through Orthon.
And you do want that, I mean.
Yeah. I haven't decided if I'm going to do the other potion recipes at this point in time. I personally don't feel too many of the other ones are that useful to me, but I think the Holy Groverload one is the one that that I definitely want, so... I will be doing that on the archaeology tasks, Slayer, otherwise maybe some skill and kill, archaeology/Slayer coming in. So you're starting to see a bit of diversity into my RuneScape play. But, you know, like I said at the start of the show, I needed this Yak Track. It was time to, you know, just throw things up and kind of invigorate things a bit. So I had to do that. And I'm glad that it's here for us this week. But aside from that, not too much else new to report. As I mentioned earlier in the show, I of course, have the spear. I have the Nox Scythe. I have Ascension. So I'm good for two-thirds of the combat triangle without breaking the bank. I'm just not sure what to get for magic that would be better than the Ports ones. I'm thinking Nox Staff. But.
Well, yeah, I mean, that would be better. There is a 88, I think, variant. What is it? It's the one from East Decimation.
Right. Decimation but Staff. But is it worth going from 85 to 88 rather than just 85 to 90? I don't know.
Really? Probably not.
Yeah.
Camel Staff?
Oh, maybe that's an option. And then there's a question of, do I want staffs or wands? Because I'm not going to be doing any of that four-ticking mumbo-jumbo, but that's a topic for another day. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode with, of course, Mod Jack, Sirion. Thank you for helping me host that special. And, of course, Tanis as well. Been an interesting week, hasn't it?
Very interesting week, yes.
So we'll be back next week for another episode of RSVMB Update, everyone. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can get that on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Casts, and more. Just visit update.rsvmb.com/subscribe. And we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSVMB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.